You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another wonderful episode of Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings. And glad that you could be with us today. Man, as always, you know, you would think, you know, you guys have a podcast on what's going on in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Surely you guys would just, you'd be sitting there waiting, you know, twiddling your thumbs. But no, you know, there's something always around the corner.
There is.
That's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it has been a busy couple of weeks. For more than one reason. So I think we should just dive right into the
Dive into it.
That was huge. Now, let's first dispel
A
rumor.
The
law has not changed. So home confinement under the Second Chance Act is still limited to 10% or 180 days, 10% of the sentence, 180 days, whichever is less. FSA is still not limited on home confinement. Okay. The law on both halfway under SCA and under FSA gives the Bureau the discretion as to whether or not they place an individual in halfway house or home confinement. The law only says pre-release placement. And under the Second Chance Act, it talks about the final 12 months in pre-release with up to 6 months or 180 days or that 10%, right? So the law has not changed. What has changed, and it's something that Bruce and I, we've been talking about for a while, is the only way to maximize home confinement placement is for home confinement eligibility to be applied based on the conditional release date. This is particularly an issue for individuals who are not earning 365 days because they're earning time credits like right up to the end of their sentence, right? Big deal. If you're, and I know the memo was leaked out to various places, Director Marshall's email, various places across the World Wide Web. But if you're looking at it, the important sentence, and I'm going to put it in front of me, FSA and SCA authorities are cumulative and shall be applied in sequence to maximize pre-release time in community custody, including home confinement. This is literally the first document the Bureau has put out that talks about the in sequence, right? We've been talking about it.
Is that the
cumulative is stacking. This is the in sequence part. Exactly. You and I talk about this in the book, right?
I know.
We have some pretty little graphs and explain. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they are applied in sequence is because of the language in the FSA. And I'm going to apologize. I'm a little scratchy today. Spent a week in D.C. and there are a whole bunch of different pollens in D.C. than in Ohio.
Yep.
They have to be implied in sequence because the law, the FSA law says an individual can't apply the credits earned until the amount of earned credit equals the remaining time to serve. Mm-hmm. So if you think about, you know, that kind of old fashioned scale with the two tins, right? The two sides, balancing credit earned, credit remaining to serve, it needs to balance. It needs to be in equilibrium. So if you were to go out to halfway house under the Second Chance Act, the Second Chance Act has to come first because the Second Chance Act is not about this earn versus apply. It's the last 12 months. So whatever they do, they have to in sequence it, right?
Right.
So that's where the acknowledging that's in sequence and it includes home confinement. Why is that important? Because if you're sitting there with a short sentence and are only earning 50 days of home confinement through most of your sentence, your home confinement eligibility date is going to be after your FSA conditional release date. So, you know, we've talked about on this show, we've talked about it in one-on-one with clients. If you think about home confinement eligibility, go back to the scale, reference the visual, old-fashioned doctor scale with the bar that slides up and down. You move the weight, you know, depending on whether your weight's going up or down. That block never changes. That block is your home confinement eligibility days. But what's happening is because every month, 10 and then 15 days, right, is being applied and advancing the release date. The date keeps moving. The home confinement date keeps moving. Those 70 days, 65 days, whatever your home confinement eligibility is, that date, those number of days doesn't change. It is a fixed block of time that only moves as the release date moves. So what ends up happening, we'll use an example. We have a client right now, today, his home confinement eligibility in the system, which is applied to the release date that's public, only affords him 32 days of home confinement eligibility, even though he's actually eligible for 62 days. But the 62 days have to be attached to the conditional release date because he's still earning days. Mm-hmm. In a couple more weeks, he's going to earn another 15 days, which is going to advance his release date and advance that home confinement eligibility. Now, the Bureau is working on a they know they need this, right? It's a process to manually calculate the number of days and then attach those to the conditional release date calculator. We, in our practice, we've developed some tools that we have that we automate to make that process a little faster rather than having to do it by hand, which is what we were doing in the early days, right? We've developed some tools so that we can very quickly identify it. That's what the field staff need. That's what case managers need. And that's being worked on. That's coming. But the other big change, which was really important that needed to be locked in, is that FSA conditional release date calculator for folks earning less than 365 days. So computers don't work. A computer brain and a human brain doesn't work the same. You and I can sit here and go, well, we're not just dealing with numbers and math. We're actually dealing with days on the calendar, right? So what the conditional calculator does is it very simply looked at each month, how many days do you have as an individual until your release date? Do you have 30 days or more? If you have at least 30 days, that means you can apply. You can get that additional 15 credit days. So then it just says, oh, okay, he can get that. So let's give him this date. The problem is, let's hypothetically say that last interval brings you to, we're going to pick a date, June 22nd.
Right.
But you don't hit your 30 days until June 29th. You're not going to get released on June 22nd. It's not that people are losing days. It's that they weren't ever going to get them. The law is, again, going back to the law, there is no prorating of days. These are earned days, 10 or 15 days based on 30 days of programming. So if June 22nd rolls around and you're 7 days short, you only have 23 programming days. Guess what? You're sitting for 7 more days. Now, again, we have been calculating that for our clients because we don't want people to falsely be hopeful, let them gonna get out, and we go, no. We've done the math, we've done the calc, we've counted on the calc on the calendar. This is gonna be your date. In the community, in was it February, they started updating them monthly. So in those overnight hours on their 30th day, the credit gets applied and you wake up in the morning to immediate release. Okay, that's all fine and good, but for planning purposes, whether it's the folks in the halfway house that need to call you in for home confinement to get the equipment removed, right? or the folks in the institution, I can only imagine the number of angry unit secretaries there were out there, because the actual date and the conditional date were both wrong. It was some date in the middle when they hit their 30th day, right? Excuse me. Changes, they have refined that last interval. They are, the calculator now doesn't try to backdate. It's not just generically looking at these numbers as if their numbers, are actually looking at them as calendar days. It's a temporal restriction.
Now, is this in effect now?
It is in effect now. This is brand new.
So
you may very well see folks out there, we've already seen it, where their conditional release date changed by as much as 15 days. It is not that you lost days. It is they were never there. They were never going to be there. But for planning purposes, for the people that do the paperwork, case management institutions, the correctional program specialists that are in the RRM office, reentry offices, they're the ones that are doing the work. They need that information, because now we have this memo. Now we're saying, oh, no, we're applying this to sequence, and it includes pathways. Or I'm sorry, home confinement. We now need to know exactly what that date is. And I knew it was being worked on. I knew it was being worked on, and so it's finally rolled out. Yeah. And this is a good thing for those folks who are looking to get that home confinement date, because with the right conditional release date, exactly, and now the acknowledgement of the in sequence, the next conditional calculator to come out will be the conditional home confinement calculator. The date based on, yes, because we don't want people having to math. Mathing is bad. but that will allow everybody from the institution and the regional reentry offices to know exactly when is this person able, when can I cut him out and send him to home confinement? Or if he really doesn't have any release needs, let's do a direct home confinement.
Yeah.
And that is better all around.
Yes. And in light of the possibility that the Bureau of Prisons might do these change orders extending the home confinement quotas at each site, then this tool would be ever so important, not only for individuals that are already in the halfway house waiting for a home confinement date, but also the people that you said are in the institution and have a sentence that's short in so far as they might be a direct home confinement placement. Mm-hmm. Right?
And if they're not, if they need the resources of the halfway house, the beds are going to be available. This has been the problem with FSA from the beginning, is the purpose of Second Chance Act is about that temporary transitional release needs. What do you need? Right. And FSA is bonus time. And it has nothing to do with what an individual needs. So when we were sticking people in home or in halfway houses for months,
years,
or years, we know we have a few that are really out there. That's the problem, is it's just a drain on the resources. The other thing, and I don't have a date yet, but I know it's being looked at. If you watched the testimony before Congress, it was like the week the new director got into place, and he was not there, but there were four individuals from different organizations. And the one gentleman talked about the success of the CARES Act, right?
Right.
And for those of you out there who might be new to this whole thing, during the pandemic, Congress passed the CARES Act, signed into law, extended the Bureau's authority to place individuals in home confinement. And it was about improving social distancing and getting sicker individuals out of the institution into their homes where they were less likely to get sick, right? they put a bunch of criteria on that. It wasn't just that you were a high-risk medical case, right? You had to have lower minimum security level, lower minimum risk level. You had to have some clear conduct related stuff. You couldn't obviously have any violence, sex offense, terrorism, gang affiliations. Can't remember everything off the top of my head. That's been a minute, but they identified what are the most high risk security issues. So again, if you read our second edition book, we actually have a whole chapter on the Second Chance Act and the history and how that was, how the Bureau looked at Halfway House before the Second Chance Act and that monumental shift that the Second Chance Act caused, right? Mm-hmm. But the Second Chance Act required that balancing of release needs versus security, right? Well, under the CARES Act, they said, okay, we're not just talking pre-release, we're actually talking home confinement. So what other things can we identify that kind of identifies, for lack of a better word, the cream of the crop, who can go to direct home confinement? And the gentleman that was on the panel talked about the CARES Act, right. Not only the CARES Act criteria, but more importantly, the Bureau completed some research. It's available on the public website. And they looked at recidivism data for individuals within the first 12 months of coming out of prison, right? They finished their home confinement time and they got released. They compared CARES Act cases and non-CARES Act cases, right? Non-CARES Act cases were individuals who were in Halfway House and went to home confinement like regular. And then the CARES Act folks that had all this additional criteria, security level type stuff. Mm-hmm. Were you getting in trouble in the institution? You know, was there any violence in your record? All of those kind of things, both the security level and the risk level, right? Mm-hmm. They added all this extra layers to say, okay, who are we going to let go out? And they found, surprisingly, note the sarcasm, surprisingly, those were the folks that actually did better when it came to lower recidivism rates. They found statistically significant lower recidivism for CARES Act individuals.
Which means that people can serve longer parts of their sentence at home.
If they're these lower risk, lower need individuals. Correct. And that's the key there. It was just preliminary research. They didn't address how long they were in home confinement. Were these folks in care under CARES Act? Were they out in home confinement for 3 months, 6 months, or were they sitting there a year? Right. But there was still statistically significant results that found the CARES Act individuals did better than non-CARES Act. And that was because those under the CARES Act had other criteria. And it's our understanding that the Bureau, in identifying who are they going to consider for direct home confinement, in addition to you don't have needs, like you have a place to go, right? They're going to take these additional criteria and they're going to use that as kind of, you know, weighing out, do we put you in home confinement or not?
Right.
Directly. Or do you need to go to the halfway house and demonstrate some positive adjustment before going to home confinement? It's not to say that somebody who's, you know, just going to halfway house under SCA and they're going to be there for, they get a 9-month referral and they're a medium risk level, that they're never going to go to halfway house. That's not what this means. This is about who do we think, based on lack of needs and this low risk, can go directly to home confinement and free up those valuable and more expensive halfway house beds. This is huge.
It is. And I know I shouldn't be thinking during the show. But I mean,
okay.
At what point? Yeah, I know, right?
But it's okay.
You know, Second Chance Act, been around since the 90s. Nothing new.
2007.
It's nothing new, man. Nothing new.
There's nothing new
but
there.
But all of a sudden, you know, it's okay. And home confinement, right? Been around. Dinosaurs roam the earth, and they're
dinosaurs were in home confinement. But prior to the FSA coming into place, where we had fixed release dates, right?
So I wonder if
we're going to direct home confinement a lot.
Right. So I wonder if there's some sort of a I mean, now we're in the early stages of this rebirth of home confinement. Amen. I got you. We need to do it because we gotta fill the existing demand, if you will.
We gotta be smarter about managing the demand.
Yes. So at what point are they gonna, okay, let's say they get one wave of expansion, but at what point, there's gotta be a cut point where at some point they say, you know what, we're good.
Well, I think where you're gonna see a lot of it used is for these individuals with the shorter sentences. So their home confinement time is 60, 90, 120 days. They're not long in the program anyway. So I think you're going to see home confinement turnover happening more quickly. I mean, you're still going to have these FSA guys with 26 months. But I think it's going to do wonders for these shorter guys because they've got shorter. I mean, just by definition, they're shorter now.
Yep.
You and I have been advocating.
And their risk was low to begin with. That's why part and parcel of the short sentence to begin with. I got you.
Right, right. So like everybody going into it, they had nonviolent offense. There was no weapons, no violence, no sex offenses. None of the things that people go, oh my God, that's terrible, right? None of that was going on. They've done well at the institution. They haven't gotten in trouble. Their programming, they were going to program anyway because these are the folks that know how to manage their time better, which is, in fact, a criminogenic need, managing free time. We can talk about criminogenic needs another day. But they are also, they're just touching the Bureau and it may not feel like it. I get 18 months, 21 months. That's still tough on the family. But from a paperwork standpoint, moving through the system, that's actually a short sentence. And they're moving quick through it.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, how about this school of thought? I mean, I would want, if I was a case manager, let me say that, I want to get my person out for as much time as maybe possible. If that meant being in a RRC for a week or two or three or whatever beyond, and then going into home confinement, well, at least be free to bed in the institution, right?
Yeah, but I think, and at one point in the Bureau, that was the thought because we had some serious crowding issues going on
back in the day. Yeah,
and it was like back in the day, it was like get people out to the halfway house, let them manage it from there. Right. But we have to remember what halfway house is for. And this is important. And this is, I mean, this goes back to the early 90s when I would be sitting doing Unit A and O. And I would say halfway house is not a reward for good behavior. It is not a means to get out of prison earlier. It is a program. It is based on needs. And even before the Second Chance Act, because I'm old, so that's like the early 90s, even before the Second Chance Act, the Bureau took the position that halfway house was for those needs. Now we put, like I said, now we throw FSA in the mix and it kind of creates a lot of drama and discontent. But with this new recognition of this in sequence, the FSA and SCA, it's in sequence with the, you know, hopefully in the very near future, I make no promises. I know what's involved in rolling out a new calculator and the testing that goes in to make sure it's working right. But hopefully we see that in the future so that the information is readily available. Essentially, as soon as the calculators are running and an individual's earning time, they'll be able to see this information. Their case manager will be. We can go back to a day pre-FSA when an individual had a release date. They had a home, a phone, and a job. In fact, a job's not even a requirement anymore. But they had a place to go. They didn't have needs. And a case manager would submit them for their home confinement eligibility. Period, end of sentence. That's what was done. And I know when that was that way for a long time.
It was.
Particularly in the camps. Like, you wouldn't even, unless you had a lot of time or you had a very short amount of home confinement. So if you had somebody that maybe only had 36 days of home confinement, right? That's what you end up with a 12 month and a day sentence. You end up with 36 days. You would submit them for maybe 30 to 60 days. because you're not going to submit necessarily, you know, you might do that. Particularly when they were still looking at the job requirement, right? You had to have time to get a job because you had to have a job for home confinement.
Right.
With this memo, they're telling us a job helps. We like to see a job. If you don't have a job, we're not going to deny you home confinement. That's what they're saying now.
Right now.
And it's a more efficient, more effective use of those home confinement beds. It is really, like, I'm really excited, weirdly so, that this is finally, because I personally was saying this 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So I am really excited to see this finally kind of come into fruition. Like I said, you see the problem, you see the negative impact when it comes to these short sentences. That's when you clearly go, oh, yeah, that doesn't work.
So let me throw this out to you. Mm-hmm. Let's say they get these calculators going, right? And let's say that there's a conditional calculator and then there's this home confinement eligibility conditional date, right?
Right.
And so I'm the camp case. I'm just going to say camp, y'all. Don't. I know our viewers at home don't get mad. I'm at a lower camp case manager, right? And I'm filling this out. And I'm going to go through the 210. You know what I'm going to do? You know what? I don't think this guy needs halfway house. He, you know, on the five-factor review or whatever, he has all this and that. I'm just going to put him in for his date on his home confinement. I'm not going to put him in for any earlier.
And that was what was happening. That's what was happening prior to the FSA, because the Second Chance Act is about need. So if you are the individual, okay, you screwed up, you're in prison, but everything's in place. You got a 15-month sentence. You're going back to your home, to your family, to the job you had, or maybe you can't go back to the jack job because you got in trouble, but people have made spaces for you. You got everything going.
Yeah.
That is what it's for. And that's what we were doing with the Second Chance Act before. And what the FSA did was it screwed up a predictable release date. That's what it did. The release dates were moving every month. The home confinement eligibility was moving every month. So nobody knew what the hell was going to happen. Even now, with short sentences, we have to deal with the, you come in at your initial team, your initial classification within 28 days, and you have a good conduct time release date. Prior to the most recent update, which we'll talk about next, because there's another update, somewhere between 45 and 60 days, your time credit would start calculating, and you'd have a conditional release date based on the 10 days. Yeah. And then a little further down the road, a few months down the road, you'd slide to 15 days earning rate, and your conditional release date would change. But the case manager had already done the paperwork and sent it out.
Right.
And now you have a halfway house date, a designation date, that is after your release date. How many did we have to deal with? I lost track. Yeah. A lot.
A lot.
I lost track how many we had to deal with. And a lot of times it was just, hey, we reach out to the right people. Hey, right. He's at the 15-day earning rate. You want to check out his conditional release date is now this.
Right.
You know, but again, you've got case managers, some of your more senior case managers that have been trained, like you walk in the door, you're a 15-month sentence, you're getting good conduct time. I've got to get your paperwork out the door now. So they're making recommendations for placement at initial classification. And now again, FSA has thrown some monkey wrenches into it because these changing dates, which brings us to the newest update. Everyone excited? Ready? Mm-hmm. In February, they started doing the overnight calculations for individuals in the community, which meant as soon as they were getting the 30 days of programming, their days were posting, they weren't waiting to the end of the month, right?
Right.
They have now started nightly calculations in the institutions. They've been able to do some computer stuff with cache and memory and some other things that I'm ill-equipped to repeat because I don't know computers well enough, but they have tightened up that program so that they can efficiently run that overnight calculator to capture people. So Again, gone are the days where we were all on pins and needles for the last weekend of the month.
Were they going to push the button?
Were they going to push the button?
When are they going to push the button?
So now if there's folks out there that aren't seeing their date move, and it's been more than a month since the last time they saw a move, you know, that would be an opportunity to reach out to us and see what we can find out and get that situation fixed. This is brand new. It has only been since May the 1st of the month. It's brand new. And it means, though, again, for individuals, they're not like we used to talk about. And this part of it is true. You know, in our retirement as federal employees, we only get credit for complete months, complete 30-day work months. And so if you retire with, as I did, 33 years, 3 months, and 3 weeks, I used my sick leave to bring me up to current, to even months, because otherwise I'd have lost those last 3 weeks because it's only complete months. So FSA still works like that. But before, you'd have an individual having to wait to the end of the month, they might accumulate 40 days, 38 days, 50 days. Like, how much did they, and then carry over with this new system, with this new coding, you having your 30 days and it's posting the credit. So that's huge.
That's huge.
Also very good with this, with coupled with the new conditional calculator, is we're getting they've just really tightened it up. In the interest of being as accurate as possible. It's a very large application. It runs through about 100 and whatever the current population is, 56,000 people. Mm-hmm. And that was taking over 24 hours. So they have been working, the computer folks have been working very, very diligently. Some of them are good friends of mine. They've been working really hard to streamline the coding and the systems with, you know, the story and the data and how they do that to shorten that down so that we can get that updating running regularly. It's fantastic.
Yes.
It is huge. We've seen the benefits in some of our folks already.
And this will be good. I mean, in a good way in catching errors, particularly if somebody was eligible, the date was advancing, this and that, and then all of a sudden their date's not advancing a month, 100%. Maybe a month and a half, or, you know, clears, and we're no longer this button push phase. Like, whoa, there's something wrong. Do you need to go to psychology? Does something get done or whatever?
Right, right. And so that's 100% important point. You know, we have a client right now, had something get messed up, not of his own fault. And we identified it, talked to the family. This was head of psychology. Go to psychology today.
Yeah, next day.
Did it, took care of it, turned around because they entered the date that they did the fix and didn't give him credit back to the beginning like they should have. Went over to his unit team, and the unit team was like, oh, it's going to fix itself. It's all keyed right. Everything's going to be fine. No, it wasn't. But it took time for him to see. And like I said, he talked to his correctional counselor, talked to the case manager, and they believed it would correct itself because the coding, you know, he was not in a refused status on an assessment. Right. And it didn't correct itself. And so now we're working with him on some administrative remedy to get it fixed. I don't think it should take administrative remedy, but that's my opinion.
Exactly.
But we are working with him and his family to get that fixed.
For sure.
But now knowing that it's not a matter of waiting to the end of the month or the end of next month for when it runs and waiting and with anticipation, that's the kind of the regular conversation on Facebook page coming to the end of the month. Is it going to be this weekend?
Has anybody seen their loved one update?
Has anybody seen it? What's going
on? But you know what? That means everybody's loved one updates every few days. So we shouldn't see that too much on the Facebook group.
We shouldn't. Everybody should be. And if there is a problem, you know for a fact it updated last month on the 22nd, and come 30 days later, it hasn't updated.
Yeah, we got problems. Yeah.
Then we need to find out what is. And it could be, you know, especially if they were in earning status, it could be an error. It could be the loved one inadvertently declined a program, not realizing that what he was saying was actually interpreted as a decline. And we need to get that fixed. right? And get them back into earning status. Because if you fall out of earning status, those programming days, and if you fall out of earning status because you in fact did something, you didn't pay your financial responsibility and went into FRP refused. Right. It's not like you get those days back. Those programming days, each day is a day. And if you're not in earning status, you're not in earning status. And it's not that you're losing time credits. It's that you're not accumulating programming days.
What about incident reports and such as that?
So two different things can happen with incident reports. Well, actually, a couple different things. So first off, there is the ability for the DHO, the discipline hearing officer, to sanction loss of time credits. Those would be days earned, not those future days, days already in the bucket, so to speak, that they take from you. That is a loss of FSA days. There is, unlike the loss of good conduct time, there is the ability to for the individual to request through their unit team to the warden for good conduct, for those FSA days to be restored. But it takes a year of clear conduct to do that. It takes a couple of assessments. For most people, that's a year. If you're shorter, you
even
might be
if it's a 100-series shot, even if it's 100, even if it's a 100-series shot.
There is no limitation on who can ask for restoration. Mm-hmm. We'll leave it at that. There is no limitation on who can ask. But for example, if someone were to lose FSAs because of a dirty UA, because they were using, then it probably would be smart on their behalf to get involved into some and complete some substance abuse treatment programming before they ask the boss for restoration. If someone gets into a fight, if someone is, you know, and I know it, you know, you and I have been there, right? Respect is a big deal. So if someone feels disrespected, sometimes a slight turns into fisticuffs or worse. And that's not the way we manage our feelings and emotions. So again, if there's an incident report related to some disrespecting of staff, a fight, something worse, probably getting involved in programming that addresses things like anger management, stress management, dealing with difficult people, any of those kind of programs, even if it's not specifically FSA programming, right? Because we have FSA program and we have non-FSA programming. There's nothing wrong with non-FSA programming, right? Especially if it's relevant to, if there's some things in terms of relevance to what the incident report was. Right. So, but if you think you're going to get an incident report, lose FSA time and not do anything and just say, well, I've maintained clear conduct. If it's serious, you're probably not in the best position to be asking the warden to reinstate. So that's just a reality. You make the recommendation to your team. Your team makes a recommendation to the warden. Another good reason for having a good rapport with your unit team, because if they're not willing to recommend you, they will send it up to the warden, but it will be a recommendation for denial. Only the warden can say yes or no. But if the unit team is in their recommendation to the warden is saying, we recommend denial, because while he's maintained clear conduct, he regularly walks up the line to being insolent. He's regularly on the edge of being problematic. You know, so yes, you can lose FSA. The other problem with incident reports is incident reports impact your pattern risk level.
Score. Your risk goes up. Institutional.
So your
conduct.
Risk level can go up.
Yep.
Particularly if the incident involves a serious misconduct, drugs, weapon, assault, fights. Those are all 100 and 200 level incident reports. And they impact you in different ways. So let's take a basic fight. No weapons. It's a fist fight. Okay. You now have
series.
A 200 level incident
206
report.
Or,
Right. Okay. You now have an incident report. You have a recent incident report. You have a recent serious because you don't just have an incident report, you have a serious incident report. And guess what, guys? That counts in two different categories for the men. You also now have a serious misconduct, serious recent misconduct. Oh, and a fight is minor violence. So you're also getting your history of violence score is also being bumped up.
Yikes.
And if you are sitting close to the edge of that cut point, that's enough to push you over. And just maintaining clear conduct may not be enough to bring it back down, because you also got hit for the serious incident report and the violence. The only thing that changes quickly with an incident report is time since the last incident report, right? So it's people just don't realize. And then let's take it to the third level. If the incident report makes it serious enough and is referred for outside prosecution, and the local office picks it up for prosecution, and we are hearing, and there's been some, you know, chatter out of the director's office, out of the Department of Justice, that they are really looking at these issues and are looking to provide the Bureau more support on, wait for it, illegal cell phones.
Right.
An illegal cell phone, if you get the 108 incident report and don't get prosecuted, like, just like, say thank you. Because if you get prosecuted, you are now ineligible for time credits, because the contraband, having contraband in federal prison, is specifically excluded by the statute.
Yeah.
And Bruce and I regularly remind people of this. We will not entertain folks on the Facebook group if we believe you are messaging the posting on Facebook from a illegal cell phone. But it's serious. And I know that some institutions have more problems than others, but, you know, all the way from a slap on the hand to you're sitting in prison longer, period, and you're stuck. And in the Bureau, because we did have this come up, even with an incident report with misconduct, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. The DHO's standard for sanctioning to determine that an individual has committed the prohibitive act is the greater weight of the evidence. That's 50% plus one. That's all that's needed. And we've got some folks right now that are dealing with that very issue. And, you know, it's unfortunate.
Yeah. It is. It is. So gotta be careful out there. So, but that is good to know that if somebody loses some federal time credit from a DHO, that they can ask for it to be restored if things line up. So that's always, it's always good to know that can happen. So, all right. So we got 6.5 minutes.
We've got, we've got a new article coming out. Do you want to talk about the book before we jump into anything else? Our books.
Certainly, let's talk about the First Step Back book. You know, I put a link on the Facebook a couple of days ago. I'll put another one on there. Folks, you want to get this book.
Maybe you can put a link into the YouTube channel as well.
Yeah.
So the new book was just released last month, and we cover several new topics, but we do we have a whole separate chapter on explaining how the conditional calculators work. We also took the liberty of including our own opinions in the last chapter about the ways that we feel like the First Step Act can be improved for the incarcerated population. And in making those improvements for the population, it will also make it easier in terms of the Bureau not spending all this kind of administrative time, you know, developing multiple calculators to maneuver through the statute is time consuming. And that means they're doing this instead of doing something else. And so we kind of took a little professional liberty and added a chapter on our thing. We also talked about DC offenders. We don't talk about the DC offenders a lot. when the initial law was passed, it only applies to US code convictions. The Bureau did, in publishing the regulatory language, said that individuals with DC codes would not be prohibited from earning credit once DC Council took steps to pass language to allow them to earn it. And they did that, and it was quite possibly the worst piece of legislative text ever produced. And we actually have a full chapter on it. It is 217 words in length, I believe. And as it's written, it actually excludes everybody who was convicted in the last 25 years. But we did go into depth in what is in the law and what the problems are. Hopefully somebody in DC Council hears what we're saying and does something about it, because their folks aren't able to benefit regardless of what programming they do.
But fear not. If you're not interested in high-level criminal justice stuff, we have what you need between you and your loved one to kind of figure out what you got coming, you know, and how to keep track of stuff. You know, ask for these time credit sheets. Compare that with what you know in the book, and that's just a, you know, knowledge is power. You know, you're helping advocate for yourself. That way you may not need, and hopefully you don't need, people like myself and Susan. That, you know, things go smoothly. It runs. You got what you had coming. There are no mistakes. You know, home confinement eligibility is there. Boom. You get into home confinement, finish out your sentence. I mean, that's what we want to see. I mean, there's
100%. And we've had people tell us that their loved ones had a problem and carried the book into the case manager's office and said, look at this. And the case manager graciously, we always like to hear that.
We had a high ranking regional official today. We sent the book Lake to that individual. So I feel sure they're going to read it and order it.
And it is really important. You know, Bruce and I do what we do for hire as consultants because it is so complicated, and it doesn't need to be that complicated, but because it is, not only are families struggling, the incarcerated population is struggling, but the case managers and the reentry office folks, like everybody is struggling with the complexity of this.
You don't want to defeat the purpose of Second Chance Act or First Step. You don't want to defeat the purpose of it by the misapplication or unnecessary types of mistakes. Look, there's always going to be mistakes. There's always going to be human error to some degree. I mean, that's always, you know, but we want that to be just kind of pared down to the 0.00, you know, one in 1,000th, you know, kind of a deal. And it's getting better. It's getting better. It really is.
And as they're building on these additional calculators and these additional tools and they're doing these things, they're error-proofing the work. You know, while I was still working, we were talking in programs, we were talking with reentry folks. About auto-populating the 210, the referral, and with that information to, again, reduce error. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. So we'll talk about, man, the auto. Yeah, that auto 210, man. That's another hot topic. We can talk about that next time.
Yeah,
that's been another fantastic episode of the Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block show. Thanks for coming in and listening. You can listen to us on the LA Talk Radio site. Also, we're on Apple Podcasts, and we're on mainline Amazon Audible now. Yay. So a little podcast that could getting picked up. Come by our YouTube channel. If you have any comments, comment there. And our First Step Act Facebook group.
Join the Facebook group, follow us on YouTube.
Yep.
Absolutely,
that good stuff. 100%. All right. Well, again, it's been our pleasure to talk with you today. And feel free to ask questions on the Facebook or YouTube, okay? And we will answer those questions the following week. So we're good about answering our members and other folks' questions because it's confusing. I get it. I mean, I barely get it. We understand how frustrating some of this is, at least now. But it's going to get better. It will get better. So, all right, everybody. So have a wonderful week. Stay safe. Yep. And we'll see you here next time on Around the Block. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.